All right, we're live.
Hi, Gregory. Yes.
Hey. All right, welcome back. Welcome to the Greg and Paul Show. I'm Gregory.
I'm Paul.
And we break down the latest startups, AI, SaaS, whatever the internet's debating. That's right. We always aim for smart takes. I personally always have a lot of stupid ones. That's okay. We'll possibly have a few scorchers. And of course, we love memes way too much.
Yeah, we absolutely love memes. We're usually streaming live on X and LinkedIn every Friday at Pacific noon and at 3 p.m. Eastern. Then we post the video straight to YouTube. And the running joke, or someday, we will get this onto all of the podcast platforms. But I think our plan is maybe when people are asking us, hey, where can we find you on podcast?
So, dude, we started getting comments.
On YouTube?
There was comments on YouTube. And then there was a comment on maybe X, and someone said, hey, this thing was a lot cooler when it was an X base. Said, I agree. I think we're doing a great job when we have haters. That's how you know you're having an impact.
People are noticing. That's right.
I think it's fantastic. Well, hey, that's an excellent way to kick this off. The first topic, we have a lot of news, a lot of exciting stuff happening. I want to talk about.
Yeah, you're really excited about this.
Algorithm. I am super excited about this. Nikita is a legend. I couldn't be happier that he posted this about how to get rich on X.
How do you get rich on X?
He said, hey, instead, think about one subject matter that you know more about anyone else in the world. It could be anything. I love this one. Plumbing, menswear, Indian food, furniture, social apps, whatever.
Right.
Post one expected insight you picked from your experience in that area. Keep it under 5 sentences. Do this every day for 6 months. If you stick to it, we'll promote your account to others. By the end, you will be recognized as the world's leading expert in that subject area, and you can charge whatever you want for endorsements, your time, or whatever, and no one will be able to take that away from you. So I've been posting on X for a couple of years and I'm still not a billionaire. So I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong here, but I couldn't be happier that they seem to have made a really big change to the X algorithm.
It's back. We're so back. It's 100%. I jumped onto X about 2 years ago. That was the experience back then. Right? Lots of smart people doing different things, talking about it, sharing their experience. Between that time and now, it shifted away a little bit, but I'm glad that they're going back to how things were 2 years ago.
I mean, it's really obvious to me, like the election and just destroyed.
I see. Right.
Twitter. I mean, that's what my experience is. Like, it kind of was declining. A lot of people left. They're unhappy about Elon. It became like an Elon cheerleading section, which was like kind of okay for me for a bit. I still would say I'm a fan of Elon, even after all his shenanigans, even after the tweet from the president. Did you see this?
No.
Dude, the president, there's some quote, I assume it's real, where he said Elon is 80% awesome guy and 20% has some issues and maybe he could work them out. And dude, Elon replies and says, he's right about the 20%. I'm working on it. I couldn't believe it. I was laughing so hard. That's what I still love about that guy. Like he's so real. That was just awesome. So anyway, yeah, the Elon takeover, there was kind of a decline, but the election is where it just went off the rails.
Right.
And like, I just couldn't take all of the just horrendous content. And then ever since then, it's just been like, Europe is falling, and every tweet I look at is just some horrendous, angry, negative, whatever. And I'm just like, not interested.
Right.
And it really started to fall off like last couple of weeks. And I was like, I'm through with X. I'm done. I'm leaving. I'm going to Threads. That's what I was telling people. It was that bad. I'm going to Threads.
Yeah. You were serious about that.
I was serious. I'm like, I'm seriously going to start looking at Threads. I'm like, and I somehow randomly wrote that, what I didn't think was all that clever of a tweet. Right. Overheard in Palo Alto, CEO says, why is this copy suck? And the CMO says, because we just use ChatGPT. We fired all the content people. And the CEO says, well, hire them back, of course. Like, what are you doing, right? I just thought it was kind of a funny quip. And like, it went mega viral, dude, like a 2.1 million views. Like, I've only had two or three other tweets that broke 2 million.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, okay, so now I'm back on X, I guess. And then like a week later, Nikita's like, dude, we're changing the algorithm. Everything's back. Smart people having fun, talking nerd stuff. I couldn't be happier. And I've noticed a change. All the like clever jokes, sarcastic remarks, awesome threads about cool tech stuff have all started to take off again.
Are back. That's amazing.
I think they saw the engagement dying everywhere. I was like looking at really big accounts like Roger Sterling and some of the other ones out there have really big followings and had a lot of viral tweets. I could see like they were only getting 1,000 views here and there. So I'm sure internally at X, they could see that like they were just crushing engagement across the board and they needed to do something.
Yeah, put it back to how it was, which is amazing.
Yeah, I wish they would like lower some of the pricing. Like paying $40 to this platform is ridiculous.
Are you monetized?
I have access to it and I got through the, so I had it.
Yeah.
And I was getting the payouts, but like, you've got to maintain like millions and millions of impressions. So the only option was to post like rage bait and fight videos and Elon cheerleading section and Trump memes. I just don't want to do any of that stuff. Like,
gotcha.
It's not worth it for $278 a month from X payouts where I was like, how do you keep the maintain? Because in the beginning, I was like posting the stuff I always post. It was going viral. It was cool.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing changed and like my engagement all went down. And I was just like, what? Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm still official in the program because I have the subscribe button where you can subscribe and like pay. Right. And I've had like one subscriber forever, which is kind of fun. Kind of proud of that, actually. I was very excited about, since we're on the topic, I was very excited about the X subscriber stuff when they first launched and like never took off. Yeah. I still would say like it's an unexplored area. Maybe someone will figure it out.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, there's so many different things that X could do. Just kind of left half baked, you know, this chat thing, the new chat, subscription, X Spaces.
I don't want to talk about new chat.
Doesn't exist.
I'm not happy with it.
I know.
Too little too late,
right?
Although I think I can put it in our doc. They're opening, we should have shared. They're opening Seattle. They're opening a Seattle office.
Office?
For
okay.
X.
Okay.
So I was tweeting like, hey, invite me over for coffee. Like,
you should show up to their office and give them angry feedback.
I would be very polite. I wouldn't even bring a kitchen sink. I would just go there. I'll wear a suit if they like. Although I do have my Japanese Back to Future t-shirt, which I love.
That's perfect. That is perfect.
Yeah, it's like after the pandemic, I never dress. I used to dress up all the time. There's all these old photos of me. Like I just no one does it. And then move to Seattle, it's even less formal than California.
Right.
You know, New York, everybody always dressed up.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're opening a... They're opening up. Yeah, I used to go to, I went to Palo Alto and I was like all dressed up and people just thought I did look ridiculous. Like they were just like, what are you doing, dude? I'm like, I'm just so used to this. All right. So we talked about the X algo. Let's go on to this Apple news.
Yeah, I'll share screen.
Oh, that's such a good meme, dude.
It's this account. If you're not following him, please do.
Oh my God.
Breaking. Apple and Google reach deal to test Gemini for Siri. So fucking over for Sama.
Yeah, so I guess OpenAI's out.
Yeah, what do you think is going on here?
I don't know all the details, but like was it that long ago, 7 months ago, that there was a big announcement about partnership between OpenAI and Apple, right?
Correct.
And then like nothing like ever kind of emerged from that. And then, nothing, you know, OpenAI
right.
created their voice assistant, which I love. I think it works really well.
Right.
And I had a lot of fun playing around with it.
Right.
Like, I don't use it as much as I'd like. I'd like to use it more.
Yeah.
But then you didn't hear much about it. Right.
Yeah.
And then there were some rumors and like drama and, you know, we have it in our doc, I think, but like maybe the court ruling, what I would ultimately say was in favor of Google, is a big part of what happened here.
Yeah.
Because now they're free to partner.
100%. I think that was exactly it. Apple was shopping around because of the uncertainties of Google's class action lawsuit.
You know, Google has been at AI for a very long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hear rumors here and there that like whatever they have internally, demos, tools, that they have a lot of stuff that right. they don't release to the public.
Sure.
At, which like is conceivably much better.
Right.
Than what OpenAI and ChatGPT have. OpenAI
has? Yeah, OpenAI has no data vault, right? Like they have access to only data that other people have access to or can pay for.
Dude, who knows? I mean, it gets a little, in my mind starts to go a little conspiracy theory, Area 51, but like Google, like Google's been at this a long time. I mean, they bought DeepMind years ago. They Correct. Have data centers. Like Google might have stuff that like we have no idea what it does. And my guess is that it's like knock your socks off.
Mm-hmm.
Impressive.
Yeah, I think
and,
so.
And perhaps way more impressive. So my guess is that if I was Apple, I'm like, that sounds like a much better fit for us than like whatever
this
geeky OpenAI technology. OpenAI technology is cool, but like I have to imagine that Google's stuff in their AI labs has got to just be mind-blowing.
I think so, especially on video image content, right? Like Google is obviously sitting on YouTube, and Google had Google Images before, and people put their photos into Google Drive. So they're sitting on a ton of content that other people
don't have. They just have way better training data. They've got access to all the funny tweets I write in Google Docs.
Exactly. So
right, they've got all your email. I mean, emails. They just like even if they get like so if you're OpenAI and you get like people limit access to content, they're really in trouble. Google could ultimately just train on their content, and they would have brilliant. Brilliant models. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yes, it's not a surprise. Like I think that this is really cool. I'm very excited about what happens, and I can't wait for Siri to actually work.
I wonder if like at some point they'll just give up on Siri.
Because looks like they're not.
Yeah, it's just like at this point, people already has a conception of what Siri can and can't do. It's just like, what are you going to use Siri for? Like, are you going to ever trust it to order anything big, pay your bills, answer calls, text people? I just can't imagine what you'll use Siri for.
You think that because the brand is dead?
Yeah, the brand is just terrible. It's a gimmick.
I think they'll reboot it. I think they'll reboot it. It'll work and people will use it.
Yeah, they'll have to knock my sock off.
It's a cool brand. I think the name is cool. So, I think the logo and the icon and the whole, I think they nailed the branding. I knew people actually worked on it. I think they did a brilliant, I think that's what they had, the company that they acquired. I can't remember the name of the company was.
Right.
But like, that's definitely what the IP in my opinion was. Oh, someone commented, my grandparents use Siri every day. That's the target audience. Yeah, that's interesting. I've seen people who are able to use it. Every time I use it, I just get frustrated and I give up. But there's clearly an audience where I think it's valuable for them as it is today.
I'm willing to be wrong.
It's not you, Paul.
And it's not me. Yeah, my grandparents. I'll ask my grandparents if they use Siri.
Okay, what else we got next? We do have the Google one. Okay, great. So there's a lot of news about Google. And
so the biggest winner this week, is definitely Google. Their stock price is up, 8%, I think, after this announcement. So they were under a lawsuit by the Justice Department trying to break them up. There was news about spinning out Chrome, disallowing them to pay Apple to boost, to use Google Search as the default search on iOS devices. And all of that is completely waived, even though that they have to pay $500 million in class action lawsuit over privacy, but $500 million to Google is like slap.
Dude, wasn't the number 31 billion that they were seeking in damages?
Yeah, the users had been seeking more than 31 billion.
So they got it knocked down to 425 million.
Yeah.
And like, they don't have to sell Chrome. They don't have to sell Android. They basically don't have to do anything. They just continue on as a monopoly,
correct,
partnering with Google, doing whatever they want. Well, thank you, Sam Altman, for creating a viable alternative to create the market dynamic where they are no longer viewed as a monopoly, which I ultimately would say is correct. I think that like ChatGPT did show there are viable alternatives now, not after 25 years of them crushing everybody into roaches.
Isn't that... So their market cap went up by, let's say, 10%. That is...
I'm looking at a chart right now. So, dude, year to date, it's up 23%. Last 5 days, it's up 10 and almost 11%.
11%? So that's, what, $100+ billion?
Something like that. In like
10.
So, I mean, I listen to some other, like, Wall Street podcasts. And, you know, I actually recommend it if you're, like, a West Coast technology... online fanatic like us.
Yeah.
It's useful to listen to people on the East Coast and hear what they think about all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I like to get their take because they're not so addled by like technology and gadgets and all that stuff.
Makes sense.
They were saying that they were surprised with the pop in Google stock and that the lawsuit had created that level of downward pressure on it, which I thought was a really interesting comment from New York finance people.
So you're saying on one side, the New York people always knew that this wasn't going to happen?
No. What I'm saying is that, I guess my take is that they wouldn't bother themselves with the details about what all of us nerds are doing on the West Coast. It is not important to them and their yachts and hanging out and playing golf in Connecticut and stuff.
Gotcha.
They care about stocks. They care about making money. And it doesn't matter what industry or what world-changing technology or product you're bringing to market.
They just
want to cut. So for them, they look at Google going like, yeah, they had lawsuits. You know, Wall Street gets lawsuits all the time, right?
Got it. Right.
And they're like, wow, this lawsuit was actually a significant impediment to their business. And so I wasn't surprised. Like, this has been talked about for years. And many places I worked, we all were very worried about like what the implications of this meant. And it was very hard to figure out what the future would be because like a lot of the technology that they provide powers the majority of like advertising products. When you're thinking like cookies and how they work on Chrome and they are the majority of the market, or even like the Google display advertising network, all the display ads that they run, they are just like intertwined into the open web. Basically, you could make a statement that the open web doesn't exist without Google. Everything else that's like popular and at scale.
Yeah.
So Facebook, Instagram, even Twitter, they're all private networks. But open web, like you type in a website URL and you go there, that's basically Google powering that either through search or their ad networks or the cookie system, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Google. Right. So if you're like an open web company, no matter what, in advertising, but other companies too are powered by cookies, like your logins that remember you, that works with cookies as well. Right. So
correct.
The whole internet is built on this. And so if they were like forced to decouple from Chrome or something like that,
divest or whatever the term,
just nobody knew what the or maybe people knew, everyone believed the implications was really bad in general for open web companies, that they were going to just create a lot of chaos, kind of like what happened with, now I'm getting really nerdy into the details, but with GDPR in Europe, like it made a lot of like open web independent technology is much more difficult to operate than they are in the United States. And those small companies struggled and some of them went out of business, right? So
it
was meant to be increasing competition, but ended up having an anti-competitive angle. And I want to be really clear about this too, because like companies like Facebook and Google have a lot of money, a lot of resources, and they could like literally sit down with the regulators, with their legal team and be like, step by step, product by product, feature by feature, like this is how we're going to do it. Does this comply or not? And get feedback. If you're like a 50 person startup working out of a crappy WeWork in San Francisco. Like, you don't have those resources. So it's mind blowing to me that anyone could ever spin this as being like somehow valuable to startups and small companies that don't have the resources required to manage the regulatory infrastructure that the Europeans have put in place and they're trying to get them to do in the US.
I see.
Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. Obviously, I have a strong opinion on that one. But
okay, nice. I see where you're going with this. So overall, good for Google. Do you think it's good for the overall market?
I think ultimately it's good for the market. You know, it's interesting. Yeah, I think it's good for the internet open web that Google is going to remain the backbone for it. Not everyone agrees with that. And like there are issues with like Google using their position to better and forward their business. I mean, who wouldn't when you're in a strong position? That's what you're supposed to do in capitalism, right?
Of course.
But like Sam Altman proved, there are competing products out there.
Yeah. Tinfoil hat. Do you think that, you know?
Okay, my favorite tinfoil hat cord. Let's do it.
Do you think there's certain, like, okay, so like think about a ChatGPT OpenAI, right? It's in Google's best interest to see them be successful, but not that successful.
Oh, of course.
Right?
Absolutely. Like, if I was Google, I would give them money. I would invest.
Yeah. It's like NVIDIA versus AMD.
This isn't even tinfoil hat stuff.
Okay.
Okay. I actually don't know the exact facts, right? They were never made public.
Right.
But do you remember the Palm Pilot?
Of course. Yes.
And the company 3Com and Palm OS, all that, right?
Right, yes.
There was a moment where that company was about to go bankrupt and would go under. And I remember this very clearly because people that don't know me, I did a lot in the mobile app ecosystem at one point, right? To say 2008 to 12, 14, around that time when iOS is brand new, was exploding. So at that moment, they almost failed. And they received a mystery donation or investment of like $50 million to keep the company afloat, and nobody knows where it came from.
Right.
It didn't have to be made public.
Right.
And so the rumors were obviously most likely Steve Jobs.
Oh, interesting.
I haven't thought about this in a long time. Like I personally am 110% convinced Steve Jobs did that.
Interesting.
Because he wanted to keep the competitor alive so that he couldn't be accused of having a monopoly with the iOS ecosystem, the App Store, and all of that, right?
Right. Yes. This is part of like the 0-1 strategy that like Peter Thiel also talks about. Yes, you want to build a monopoly, but when you're small and just starting out, you don't want to tell everybody that you're a monopoly.
I would spin it as like, I don't think you ever want to tell everyone your monopoly.
Correct.
There's no point. There's no point it's like, right, where that is good marketing.
That's right. You don't ever want to say that you're,
I think that's what Steve was doing, was like, he knew he had the market. He had the best product, the best ecosystem.
That's
the
amazing.
Best place for developers to make money. Still one of the greatest achievements ever on the internet. The iOS app ecosystem is just mind-blowingly amazing. And that, at the moment, whatever, I can't remember if it was actually 3Com or Palm or which company, it's probably Palm, was about to fail. He's like, somebody was like, here's $50 million. We want you guys to live, right? There's there's no doubt in my mind that came from some Steve.
Right.
I mean, Steve was a brilliant guy and like obviously beyond ruthless. If I was him, like you would just, and I'm not saying that this happens, you would just anonymously or to some degree, transparently, you invest in a venture fund and then you have that venture fund make the investment.
Right.
Which is totally legit. Like, it's not like you're not allowed to do that.
True.
And then you could just ask his friends at the fund, like, hey, can you make this investment?
But the
thing that was interesting about this one is that it was very public that whoever made the investment was kept secret. Which I always kind of loved. I felt like that was Steve's way of saying it was him. I really believe that. Yeah. If anybody out there listening to this knows any details, like, dude, send me a DM.
That's right. Yeah. We want to know.
I'd love to know. It's like, I haven't thought about this in a long time. This is a very obscure aspect of like Silicon Valley history, which I am way too big of a fan of. So if you know anything about this, like, let me know. I'd love to hear. I just want to know for my own.
Yes.
My own personal edification.
Yeah.
All right. We beat that one to death. Let's go on. Atlassian.
Oh, yes. Okay. So this is also.
Do you understand this one? Can you explain this to me? Yeah.
So there's a company called The Browser Company. They originally had a browser that all the developers love called Arc. It was pretty successful, and then they kind of killed it. Just no update. They completely dropped the ball. And they kind of released a 0.2 or 2.0 Dia browser, but it just didn't kind of pick up the same steam as Arc.
Hold on. What is the name of their browser?
It's called Arc. ARC.
Never heard of this thing.
Yeah, it's a very, like,
is it for PC or mobile or both? Is it on iOS? Seriously.
It's on everything, I think. I'm not sure about mobile, but it's definitely on desktop. It is a Chromium wrapper. So it's basically Chrome, but has some bells and whistles around privacy. A lot of the developer crowd like
it. Is it a super privacy-centric one?
Yeah. Like, their company, Arc.
I was actually thinking about starting to use this. Like, I caught, like, a podcast where Jason Calacanis was saying this, how he uses all this secure stuff.
Yeah.
Like, anyone ever leaked his Google history or anything, it just, could just be catastrophic.
Sure, exactly.
So there's people out there that need. Yeah, I know. I don't know. I was thinking about. Anyway.
Well, like, if you actually care about, like, privacy or encryption system, then you will use web browsers like Tor, right? So there are web browsers that's built for privacy.
All right. So what's the advantage of this one?
Arc is just like think of it as like a prettier wrapper around Chrome. Right. So for look at the.
So no advantage. Yeah.
Like, better, you have nested tabs, you have nested bookmarks, right?
So better, improved UI.
Improved UI. Some people love the navigation to be on the side instead of the top. Like, that's a big selling point. People just like, oh my God, I like it on the side.
Yeah, everyone's saying no, it's not privacy centric. Okay, thanks for clearing that up.
Thanks for clearing it up. Exactly. Yeah, there's Mozilla, Brave, there's Tor if you actually want to care about
this privacy. Guy's saying it's about the organization of tabs. And, okay, so it's just correct. Like an improved user experience for browsing the web. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. So, like, the biggest selling point is some people
why would
like
you want this.
Good question. I don't know.
Okay, we're stumped.
I have no idea. Like,
I mean, I, so sense. I, okay. Okay. I do see an angle where, these things matter. Right. And like, you know, you see, I think the way to think about this is that Perplexity really kicked off this, at least concept, that the browser is going to matter. And that AI automation is going to be built into it. I know you disagree about this whole thing. And so this might prove to be a trend that doesn't go anywhere. And then I signed up for the beta, but I haven't gotten it yet. There's going to be an Anthropic browser. Obviously, like, people are talking about this, right? There's some belief out there that these are going to matter and that there's some need for, like, AI integration automation to happen at the browser level. I hear you that, like, it seems like a transitional technology to a future where MCP servers or some other type of technology takes over. But, like, on the other hand, this is how average people access the internet, and they're going to be using browsers for a long time.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I you're right. I think my prediction with, like, going through MCP where agents are talking to each other, that's going to happen, just not probably on my time scale of, like, 3 to 5 years, let's say.
So if I was Atlassian, right?
Why would,
like,
I
having a browser initiative? I mean, it could be interesting, right?
The only thing that I would think is probably integrating it with Jira, where if you download this browser, you can have a whole bunch of automation around their Jira platform. So it has a deeper integration into Bitbucket, maybe automations through QA and testing. But it's not worth
it. Sounds real. It sounds like a real edge case.
$610 million in cash.
Who knows? Sometimes these deals too are just like investors looking for an exit. And
correct. Sure. Right.
Which is fine.
I'm stumped.
All right. We can't figure it out. Maybe someone else can. Okay, let's go to Waymo.
Waymo, would you like to talk about this one?
Yeah, I'll do this.
You're a big fan of Waymo.
I feel like. A huge fan. Huge fan. So they're expanding to Seattle.
Right.
It's funny. I posted this on LinkedIn too, and I had the same thing. I said, I need the code Waymo than everyone else. And I literally had people commenting like, oh my God, I wish I had thought of this and stuff. And I do need the code Waymo than everyone else. So if you can help me get one, I'd love to be on the beta group testing here in Seattle. I was on the group testing it in San Francisco. And my first time like using Waymo was like mind blowing. Have you used one?
No. I'll be in San Francisco in October. So
all right. Yeah, you gotta take a Waymo to our event. So dude, the experience is mind blowing. Like I called it to the hotel and the car arrives and you're like, wow, cool, it actually came. Yeah. And then you're like, how do I open the door? And there's no driver to like wave to you or anything.
Right.
And so I'm like stumbling and I'm like, oh, in the app, there's a button or something. Like I've arrived and boom, you hit it. And then boom, doors open and you get in. It's like, it is like the first time. It's just a wild science fiction level experience.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'll have to experience it myself and I'll take a video.
I started using it everywhere and like making videos and stuff. And then I got really into like the playlist technology and I was like making playlists and doing
right.
I was hacking the screen in the back. Yeah, making videos of it. And I stopped using it because like everyone decided that they were cool and then everyone started using it and then it'd wait forever. And then they raised prices and it was more expensive than Uber. And I was like, this makes no sense.
That makes no sense.
Yeah. I'm not that irrational. So anyway, they're launching in Seattle, which I'm really excited about, and I want to be a part of it. And at a higher level, well, there's a couple of interesting angles here. So I was telling you earlier, like I still hate driving. I don't drive. I ride a bike everywhere, always have, because like deep down I am a crazy hippie and I don't like cars and I like bicycles and I think they're much better for the world. So Waymo, I should be the spokesperson because like I'm totally dedicated and think this technology is amazing.
Totally.
And I can't wait for it to be
totally
pervasive.
So that people don't need driver licenses, which is
I just like I grew up in New York City, right? And like we didn't have a car growing up, and so I was like, I never learned. And then moved to California, and then I was driving. My wife's like, "Dude, you're so bad at driving." And I was like, "Yeah, I know. Whatever." For like a year, she's like, "Can you just ride a bike everywhere?" And I was like, "Really? That's the deal?" I was like, "This is the best ever." And so I would just ride a bike everywhere. I'd ride down to like Palo Alto and like change in the bathroom at some venture capital firm and stuff. They were like, oh my God, this guy's crazy. Like rode a bike from San Francisco. Like how long it take? I'm like, oh, hour and 20 minutes. It's no big deal. Right.
That's amazing.
It was fun. I missed that. Seattle's not exactly, it's a little cold here and the rain kind of like, makes it a little more difficult to ride everywhere. All right. Waymo expanding. Do you have any comments about Waymo? What are your thoughts on self-driving cars?
I just got to experience it. Then I'll have much more to say.
Okay. When you come to San Francisco, we'll do it together. We can make a little video.
Okay.
It'll be fun.
Deal.
Okay, cool. All right. Stripe, this one's cool. I just put this on the list. So
I'll pull this up.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So there's a lot happening in the payments world. And I don't know if I would say I'm a crypto skeptic. Maybe I'd like to say I'm like a crypto real and blockchain realist. Like,
right.
Really interesting technology. Been around for like what I would say is a long time. It's been challenging to find use cases beyond, I'm going to go out there and say like illegal ones. Like I think the Bitcoin technology does a great job. And there's other anonymous coins and stuff too that are even better for like illicit transactions and activity. Like it does a really good job at that. I think digital gold angle of Bitcoin is interesting too. I'm actually supportive of that. I think it's cool. But I think it's struggled to find like a real world application, at least as big as the hype. And what's interesting is like the emergence of stable coins, I think are ultimately going to be the use case that makes the most sense for a lot of blockchain technology,
right?
Which is the ultimate
dollar.
Yeah. Also, like the David Sachs and have been able to, you know, get the regulatory approval to make these things legitimate and real in the United States. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what the big part of it, which is the irony of like crypto, because it started as this kind of like hacker thing. And people thought they're going to challenge the Federal Reserve Bank and challenge currencies and all this ridiculous stuff that like I found very entertaining. Like I did like reading these threads on Reddit about the medieval mercantile crypto future that these guys, that was hilarious, but so far removed from the reality of how things work. Like only some wingnut in their mom's basement would even believe that this was a possibility, that you're going to create this technology that a bunch of like nerds start like mining these things in their home. And you're going to disintermediate the Federal Reserve Bank and the US dollar. Like it's so cute that like, I remember like when I started like people like really serious about this, I'm like, oh my God, dude, it's so obvious. Like I was saying to someone in San Francisco one time, all they need to do is make crypto transactions illegal from legitimate financial institutions. And yes, maybe you could find, which is basically what happened. And like, you could find someone, you could do it, but like if they do it at scale, and outlaw it, it's very difficult for people to access this stuff. And so like, I was like, of course, like the Federal Reserve and the US dollar and the Treasury, they can completely destroy this if they want to. Like the idea that, it was gonna be competitive and win head to head is lunacy.
Yeah,
total lunacy. Anyway, so I like that the irony, and also like that the stablecoin regulation has made it legitimate. And I think stablecoins are awesome technology. I also really like the idea that the stablecoin technology and regulatory environment facilitates, and encourages private issuing of these things, and they're not issued by the Fed. I really personally don't think like a Fed coin is a great way to go. I think having like Circle and everyone doing their own coin is super interesting. And so of course, like Stripe sees the opportunity to put like a blockchain out there that can facilitate stablecoin transactions, I think is excellent. And I think they have their own one or whatever. So I think these stable coins are going to be how a lot of fintechs operate, either internally or on their own network or network to network, because they're just going to make facilitating these transactions just so much easier than like, they mentioned the article like Swift and some of the other like esoteric and let's call it like legacy systems that are in place to move dollars around the world. They're just really old and they need to be updated.
Yeah, gotcha. I see where this is going. So like Canada, for example, our money system is terrible. It's just like decades behind. We've been implementing this thing called like payment rail, real-time payment rail, for the past like 15 years. So big companies like Shopify is involved in talking about this, implementing this. Stripe's involved, of course. It's just going nowhere still. But if this thing basically replaces all of it,
yeah, I like that. The problem with, at least I don't know that much about the Canadian, it's a government program, right?
Yeah, it's a government program, exactly.
Yeah, in general, I think that like, I'm unapologetic like advocate of like free markets. And I think that like the way Sachs engineered this so that there's private issuing stable coins is excellent. Like I think there should be competition between groups. I think private people controlling these things is great.
Yeah.
I think there's really straightforward regulations with like coin for coin. You've got to match it with like US treasuries. It creates huge demand for US treasuries, which is really great because like the debt's just going to keep exploding in the United States. There's no way around it. And so now we have a new way to monetize treasury. So I think it's awesome. I'm really supportive.
Love it.
Of this stuff. And I don't know what the regulatory environment is. Canada, can they issue Canadian stable coins?
Why not? You know, nobody will use it, but why not?
Dude, that is like a really important point. I think that the stable coin tied to the US dollar just means like massive adoption of dollars all around the world.
Correct. That's exactly
right. Yeah, and I think like people are missing this, particularly people arguing against it. Like using US currency in other countries are already common and popular for a lot of good reasons.
Right.
And this will just make it so much cheaper and so much more efficient. And the value that brings to those people is just enormous. Like if you're forced to use Zimbabwean whatevers or Argentine whatevers. Like, I actually do not know what those currencies are officially called.
Yeah.
But like the inflation, that's really, really painful for you, like on a real legitimate way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if you're able to access a stable coin and you just put everything in that, like, that is just going to bring so much relief.
Yeah. There's already like massive black market of USDs everywhere, right? Especially in South America. And
there are like, yeah, there are really weird systems where there's like storefronts where you bring your money in and they do like all kinds of like weird financial systems that we don't have like in the West that I struggle to fully comprehend like how they work.
Correct. Yeah. People like there's really, really weird systems, right? Like, for example, in Argentina, there is a official government exchange rate going from the Argentinian pesos to USD. Which is completely different from the black market rate, which everybody else uses.
Which everyone uses, yeah. And it's and it's wild.
It's really weird. So stablecoin, in some sense, could introduce actual real market force on a bigger scale.
Yeah, so and the idea of like Stripe getting into this, so they're facilitating an enormous amount of payments, right?
Yes.
And so it'd be really interesting to see like. Where they take this.
Yes.
Because they could be responsible for like a really big portion of the stablecoin market. They say they're not launching with stablecoin. They're just going to have the payment rails and the blockchain. So really interesting.
I'm very, very interested. So like as a Canadian selling into the US, one of the biggest struggle is moving currency across the border. Mm-hmm. So stablecoin technically solves this problem, right? Like it's a ledger system that's doesn't really, it's geopolitically independent could solve a lot of pain.
I agree
for merchants.
All right, what's next? AI key, this is yours.
Okay. AI key. I'm a big sucker for all of these like AI keys that plugs into your phone and supposedly automate all of your browser activities.
So I didn't understand, explain to people listening that like what is this? Like I started watching, like I didn't understand what this thing is or like why it's done this way.
Okay. So on their website, it says it's a tiny USB-C key, a tiny USB thing that plugs into your phone directly and turns it into an AI assistant.
So what I didn't understand is like, why is it's an app, but it's delivered that way. That's the part that like made it so difficult to grasp.
I don't know the implementation details, but I think, first of all, it can't be an app because Apple's toolkit does not allow you to do this through just an app. However, it does have APIs in place, SDKs in place, if you plug in a physical device, right? So sometimes if you plug your phone into your laptop, you're allowed to control your phone.
So you get a deeper level access to the system.
Correct. Through this USB key, you have a deeper access to your phone. And essentially their sell is that it allows AI assistant to have access to your phone to answer your emails.
Why can't this download it from the App Store? Like I didn't understand.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So like all the nerds understand this because you can't do this with just an app. That's why you need this USB key thing.
Have you tried it?
It's pre-order batch. And by the time I saw this, it's already sold.
The other thing I didn't understand, does it have an app, a companion app that you use to control the thing? Like how does it work?
I don't think so. So basically it watches... It's like a macro recorder, as in it watches you do things. And I think it just records it. And then now you can call on it to repeat it. That's my guess.
So there has to be some UI where you can go and access like scripts or replays or whatever they call them.
Yeah, correct. So like it says that, yes, you can tell your agent what you need. See which app asks, give it access. And then it will do the thing for you.
I mean, the idea, as I understand it, like an agent that runs on my phone and can do things and can access like all the different applications of it is like very cool.
Yeah.
I could see a lot of people say like,
right,
super scary. That's the first thing I thought really is like, I was like, what kind of like nation state Russian hackerware is this? Oh, get out of America to put this on their phone. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to, and I'm not, I'm pretty like loose with like putting things on my computer and installing browsers and doing stuff.
Yeah.
But I was like, I don't know about this one. Like,
yeah. Yeah. So like the community know actually calls out that the founder was part of IDF. So your
Israeli Defense Forces.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Of course he was. I mean, like, why? Well, I'm not shocked at all. Like, in fact, like, I'm glad he wasn't part of the Russian Defense Forces. I mean, maybe feel better. I'm still not sure.
Yeah,
I feel better about it, but
I love the community notes, right? Like the calling out this is an Israeli military intelligence developer who used to work on privacy air quotes tools.
Well, of course he did. What else would he work on? He wasn't a cook. Oh my God,
I love it.
So it's an Israeli intelligence program. Yeah, of course,
it becomes a rootkit to your phone, man.
Exactly. I was like, I don't know about this thing. Like, yeah, I what was the company that sold the other, do you remember the other hacker software that could like rootkit into the phone, and they sold the phones? I think they were iPhones, and then it would like hit the button and a whole new interface came up.
Oh,
do you remember this?
I don't, but are you talking about like jailbreaking or?
Dude, there was I believe it was a Canadian company that sold this like straight up hacker illegal, like, you know, drug cartel software that would, during the boot, you did something and then it booted into a different operating system. It was pretty sophisticated. The technology was cool. Like it did some cool stuff. And then it had secure messaging and all this. You don't remember this? And then like, this is brilliant. And NSA like hacked it all. And they just like let it run.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like monitoring all of the communications between this like global drug rings. And I love this. You could look this up. This blew me away. That's they made some arrests eventually. And that was how I learned about this. So it was like a news item. Yeah. In the Netherlands, and they had uncovered a shipping container that had like torture setups in it. Like, this is like the real world, dude. Like seats, and like they were torturing people in a shipping container in the Netherlands. Like, I don't know if the thing was transported around the world or something. This is like, you know, true crime television level ridiculousness that like,
right.
I remember reading it like multiple times. It's like, I didn't, but they had a photo. Like, I was like, I don't believe this is true. Like, there's really like international smuggling rings that are just doing like Hollywood movie level stuff. And it was completely true. And the NSA like listened in on all of their communications for a long time, made all these arrests. And I think they busted the company or the company was disbanded. The company also had some kind of like culpability, even though their claim was like, oh, we just make software and it's secure and people can do whatever they want with it, which
gotcha. Yeah,
there's a part of it buys that argument, but there's an adult inside of me who's like that's not.
That's wild.
That. You have some responsibility.
I'm just did looking, you find it? Are you talking about this?
Dude, it's crazy.
What is this?
I cannot believe it's real.
Oh,
there's the phone. EncroChat. There's the phone.
You talk about EncroChat. There you go.
Yeah.
Operating on custom Android phones provides worry-free secure communication. Yeah, that's amazing. That is. Yeah, there. So, a Telegram founder also went through this. So, like, there is definitely communication. Or with like promises that you can do secure communication. It just invites the wrong crowd.
Dude, so I worked at an early social network like way, a long time ago.
Yeah.
Very early when like there was, the internet had a lot of like these anarcho hacker people who were like very into like free speech. And I was kind of like one of those people, right? Like grew up in that culture.
Right.
But I remember like, seeing the stuff that people were posting there. And I'm being like I love all this like free speech stuff, but even X today, like there has to be limits. Mm. You can't just like let people do whatever they want. And this argument that like,
yeah,
oh, okay, we're just making technology and people can do what they want with it. Like the practical reality of that, when I saw what they were doing, I was like, that's not okay.
I see.
Like, and I don't know where the limits are, and there's a lot of arguments over it, and those arguments are legitimate and they're hard to make.
Yeah.
They can be uncomfortable. And so I'm not saying that I know the answer, other than like the answer can't be like, do whatever you want.
Say whatever you want.
That's not okay. I guess I would have a wider aperture than most people. I think people should be able to do a pretty wide range of stuff, but I think there's definitely limits. Even like the joke, even in like parts of the US, is that even if we have the Second Amendment, right to bear arms, there's no one arguing for like private ownership of a nuclear missile silo.
Right. Yeah.
No one.
Right. Right.
Not even the crazy NRA and stuff. Right.
Right.
Like they there is even for them like a limit on the aperture of like what they think is appropriate. So I like that analogy. It's like, I believe like you should make technology and facilitate communications. People are going to do all kinds of weird stuff with it. Some of it might be okay, and I think it should be pretty wide, but yeah, there's some obvious use cases.
Right.
Like have you seen the Roblox stuff recently? We didn't talk about that. There's like all of those adult child groups that are like facilitating relationships between like adults and kids. It's like, it's crazy, right? So there's obvious like limits and how much responsibility people have. Like I'm not the master or the, I don't know all that stuff, but you can't just like manufacture and market a phone that is helping facilitate criminal gangs torturing people. I wouldn't feel good about doing that. All right. Are we going to end up on the mixer? Is that the last one?
That's the last one. Let's do that.
Yeah. We should chat about that. So I'm looking at the screen right now.
It's getting closer.
And dude, there's 99 people. Oh, it probably says on there, 99 people registered.
That's
and
amazing.
So, yeah, I left 100 slots. So, hey, if there's someone listening, go and sign up or at least apply.
Yeah, if you're in San Francisco, end of October.
One more slot left. Yeah. And then we're going to put the wait list on. Yeah, this is the, this is our mixer.
Wow.
So yeah, we're doing really good. Look at that.
What should people expect this, at this mixer?
Yeah. So I booked us a relatively small room. So it'll be a pretty intimate gathering.
Okay.
At a place around Moscone near where TechCrunch Disrupt will be happening. And so we've got a couple speakers. So we'll do more of like a fireside chat with them. And then we'll have, you know, all these founders and all these investors able to kind of like
Perfect.
Hang out with each other, talk about what they're doing.
Yep.
I don't think it'll be too structured of an evening. So a little introduction, some fireside chats, some networking. You're going to be providing everyone the drink. So
yep.
Thank
That's
you.
Right.
Thank
Thanks
you for that.
Me.
We talked about doing demos, but I can't decide. What do you think? Do you think like demos would be interesting or kind of boring and lame? I go back and forth on this one.
Demos could be cool. Maybe we have a short list of people. Maybe we can do some. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I guess I need to be very take a look at the space very clearly. Like I like the idea that you could go and talk to them and get a little demo of their tool.
Yeah.
And I've been to events where that was done really well. But also don't want it to be like
super
too much or just like it can sometimes hurt the atmosphere.
Right.
And make it not as like conducive to everyone kind of like talking and chatting and just trying to get to know each other and stuff. So we'll figure it out. Hey there, my sound went out. Uh-oh.
Check.
There we are.
We're still back, we're back.
There we are. Now I can hear you.
Who's what kind of founders are you looking for? Is it founders for all kinds? C-stage?
Most people are relatively early stage. They've maybe raised some money or they're bootstrapping. We don't have anybody who's probably past Series A.
Okay.
So maybe seed, pre-seed. Yeah. Seed and pre-seed can be a lot of money these days. So
that's true.
Early stage.
SaaS or AI, I would say.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's funny how the names keep changing. Like I still think it's, in my mind, it's all SaaS software. Like it's not like a business model has changed all that much. You still pay a fee for ChatGPT every month. It's still technically SaaS. I know the trend is to like add an AI to the end of your company name,
but
there hasn't been any like significant innovation on the biz model from at least how I think about it. It's not like we're going back to some massive world of ad supported tools.
True.
I really think that like, what would be the other option? Ad supported or single time download or an install.
Yeah,
right? I don't see anybody that wants to go back.
One-time payment?
Yeah, at one point, like one-time payment. Like, it was funny. It was the guy from 37 Signals, right? I was listening to that.
That's right.
I remember listening to that. I was like, I got really excited. I was like, yeah, I really buy this. Like, and then I got off that podcast or whatever. And I was like, this is not a smart idea. Like, paying single time for software, like, it hasn't been adopted widely. I don't know anyone doing it. I am an advocate for like simple pricing, and that's what I try to do with some of the stuff that you and I are working on. It's like one price point and keeping them really simple. I like that. I think having these really complicated pricing tiers and credits and all kinds of stuff is not fun. It's
confusing.
Yeah. Maybe it's necessary, but like, it just makes it really hard. And so not a big fan of that. So sign up. If you're in the Bay Area for TechCrunch Disrupt, October 28th. And then we're trying to figure out what we'll do next year for events. I think you and I talked about maybe trying to hit up all of the tech weeks, New York, LA, San Francisco, and Seattle, right?
That would be very cool. Yes.
Yeah. In my fantasy world, we do a live stream for everyone, like whether we make that happen or not. I don't know, but I think that would be, pretty cool. Yeah. This type of mixer, I think, is great for San Francisco, but in other locations, I think we'll just do more of a founder-focused type of event.
Mm. Got it. Okay, that was fun.
All right, we're good?
We're good.
All right, man. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.